Hello, I'm Keith Perron, and welcome to Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio International. This past week, Zimbabwe has been in the news over the, well, even though the Zimbabwe military is not calling it a coup, it kind of is a coup. They actually have placed Robert Mugabe, the president of Zimbabwe, and his family under house arrest. Now, Zimbabwe, which was formerly known as Rhodesia, on November the 11th, 1965, declared unilateral declaration of independence from the United Kingdom. This actually turned out to be a bigger problem because what happened was the United Nations, the British government, actually most countries around the world imposed sanctions against Rhodesia. Rhodesia did survive until 1980 when it became Zimbabwe, and President and Prime Minister Ian Smith stepped down and Robert Mugabe took over. Now, there's of course a lot of criticism about the days of Ian Smith's Rhodesia, and a lot more criticism of Robert Mugabe's Zimbabwe. At one time, Rhodesia had a thriving agricultural sector and was once known as the breadbasket of Africa, supplying many countries in Africa with food, as well as exporting to a number of others as well. But of course, sanctions and the war that was taking place against the communists did have an impact against the economy, but nothing like what has happened since Robert Mugabe. Today we're going to be revisiting a guest that we had on the show a few years ago. His name is Derek Partridge. Now, Derek Partridge is an actor and television host. He famously even had a role in the original series of Star Trek. He worked for a number of years at RTV, which was Rhodesian television, where he presented news, did weather, and also had his own talk program called Frankly Partridge, as well as presenting a program called The Quiz Kids. I began by asking him how he ended up in Rhodesia.
Good evening. We're starting off tonight on the martial arts. With me in the studio to tell us something about one specific aspect of them are Patricia Backer and Eric Morris. Good evening and welcome to you both. Good evening.
Well, although the perhaps wasn't said, I in essence became a non-person because we in Rhodesia were subject to United Nations sanctions, and I in effect had broken that by going out there to work. No, it never in any way affected me by people saying that, but I know exactly what you're talking about from what happened to you, and that would have been the attitude from Prime Minister Harold Wilson, but it didn't seem to permeate down to many other people. In fact, I would say the majority of the people in England were very pro-Rhodesia. They were not on the side of Harold Wilson. Probably the majority of Rhodesians were of British origin. Rhodesians came from, you know, many countries around the world, but the majority certainly would have been of British origin.
When you ended up at the Rhodesian Broadcasting Corporation, you said the decision took 10 seconds to go down there. And, you know, they're saying, okay, come down here as a TV presenter. This was your something that you've been dreaming about for all this time. What was it like the first day that you showed up for work and said, okay, we have a TV show to do?
Well, first of all, it wasn't the Rhodesian Broadcasting Corporation. It was Rhodesian Television. At the time, Rhodesian Broadcasting Corporation was the radio station, and it was state-controlled. RTV, Rhodesian Television, was a private company, very successful, and a completely independent entity from it. Later on, I'll tell you what happened with that. But at the time, no, it was an independent entity. Mike Hart Jones, for my first talk show, gave me two priests who were both very talkative and very controversial because they came from opposite sides of certain religious beliefs. So I didn't have to do one heck of a lot. Yeah, I suppose it was, but it seemed to come very naturally to me. I really didn't have any problems with it. I just got on with the job and did it. Because of the war, we did have a teleprompter, but we didn't have enough personnel to operate it. So for the news, you read scripts which you had previously typed or the news department had typed. And it was rather funny. We were rather formal there. sort of, you know, suit and tie, but because of the heat, we usually had sort of bathing trunks underneath where you couldn't see them. Actually, reminds me of the early days of British radio broadcasting when Lord Reith was in charge. And this is for radio, I stress. He insisted that his radio newscasters were tuxedos, dinner jackets with high pointed wing collars digging into their throats. It's hard to imagine anything more stupid. But no, not really much of a problem. But frankly, Partridge was a live show, so things can go wrong, and you often find yourself sitting in your seat, and you can see the control room, and you can see people panicking madly, and you have to sort of sit there very calmly and try and get through it. And I remember once I was set to interview one of the Rhodesian Air Force squadron leaders, and he was late. Well, it's a live show, you have to go on. So I sat in my chair, and I swiveled around interviewing myself until he rushed into the studio and saved the situation.
Well, you know, when you were working for Rhodesian Television, you said it was a private company, and there were UN sanctions against Rhodesia. The equipment that they were using at Rhodesian Television was black and white. They didn't get color until the early 1980s. Where did the equipment come from? Was it surplus equipment from the UK?
The equipment, I'm sure, came from South Africa. I mean, most stuff came from South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, during sanctions, South Africa very kindly supplied us with many, many things. And, of course, benefited financially very strongly from it. You know, we had sanctioned busters all over the world clandestinely acquiring equipment that we needed for every aspect of life and living. But and there was a certain amount of rationing. There were certain shortages, but nothing that was really serious that didn't impinge on one's daily life. One thing about the news, though, you would read your newscasts, and then you would go and listen to the BBC to see what the news really was. You know, there was a certain amount of censorship, I suppose you can call it that, but when you're at war with a terror organization, it's not unreasonable that you have to have some control over what you broadcast to people. It's a very small country, very close-knit, and one of the worst jobs that we had to do every night when we started off the newscast, the first item was, Combined Operations Headquarters regrets to announce the death in action of, and then you would sometimes read your own friends' names. That was tough.
During the time when you were presenting Frankly Partridge and also the newscast, you said that RTV was a private organization, unlike the Rhodesian Broadcasting Corporation, but would, for example, the newsroom or yourself or the producers, say, get phone calls from the government saying, look, we heard that you have this story. We wish that you wouldn't go ahead with it.
No, I simply don't know the answer to that. I imagine that in the newsroom where most of the stories were written, there was some form of control, some form of checking to ensure that what went out was not something they didn't want to go out. But I was not personally aware of any direct censorship.
Yeah, I was just about to say, I was listening to some air checks of the Rhodesian Broadcasting Corporation, and I think something that would surprise many people, because when I mentioned that I was doing this interview with you, people that say didn't know that Zimbabwe was once Rhodesia, and there are some people out there who didn't know that, they were thinking, oh, African broadcaster, it probably sounds like everything else out there today, and it didn't. I mean, RBC sounded very, very professional.
Oh, it was indeed. The people there tried their very best to emulate the BBC, even though they were the RBC.
Mm-hmm.
And there was the ambition of a number of them to someday get to Britain and work for the BBC.
You know, there were some people also, very well-known people that worked for the RBC. One of them is who was also a comedian by the name of Warwick Starr.
No, I knew both Rex Starr and Clem Soleil more by name. For whatever reason, I think that by the time I got there, they were either not working there anymore or working less. And I think I may have met them, but I don't have any particular memories of either of them. But they're both sort of legends for Rhodesians.
Now, you're from the UK, and you were working in Rhodesia, and the British government was very very forceful in pushing sanctions toward Rhodesia. How did the local population see you? Did they see you as somebody, oh, you see, look, people do support us. People, you know, he's from the UK. Did they welcome you with open arms?
Very much so. I remember when I started off doing a weather forecast one night, I said something about your weather will be so-and-so. And Mike Hart Jones, after the broadcast, said, it's not your weather, it's our weather. I felt that they adopted me as a Rhodesian, which is exactly what I felt like, and I adopted Rhodesia as my adopted country. It's still one of the most wonderful memories, and I still even carry in my wallet my Rhodesian identity card. It was made of metal, because this was for the elections, and if the ID cards had been made of plastic, they could have been easily forged, but the metal process was too expensive and too difficult. So yeah, that's still in my wallet, and I remember you used to go through the scans at the airports and something would go off, and I'd go, oh damn, it's my metal identity card.
When you were in Rhodesia and doing the TV series, how long did that run for, and what was your deciding factor on leaving?
Everything I did there, the news, the Frantic Partridge, the Quiz Kids, and I did many Message to the Nation specials. I was there for 2 years. Then what happened is that the Minister of Information, who was a great supporter of me, died. And at the same time, somebody in government decided that RBC, the radio, should take over RTV. So that it became, again, a totally government-controlled entity. As a result of that decision, virtually the entire staff of RTV resigned in protest. Some 25 people, all the top producers, directors, technicians, engineers, everybody resigned. They just weren't prepared to work for what we consider to be the idiots at RBC. Mm-hmm. This was an incredibly brave decision because it wasn't like in any other country where you've got 10, 20, 30, 50 other TV stations you can go to. We had one television station in Rhodesia. So they were, in fact, cutting off their jobs and their professions. They had nowhere else to go. I stayed on for a while because, unknown to the people at RBC, who had always been very jealous of at RTV, I had a contract, so they couldn't get rid of me initially. When the contract came to an end, they were only too happy to get rid of me. At that point, some people decided to get up a petition to keep me in RTV and in Rhodesia. And there were sort of booths set up all around the major cities with people collecting signatures to keep Partridge in Rhodesia. And ultimately, it was as if you compare populations, it was as if about 10 million Americans signed a petition saying we want to keep this guy. And this petition was presented to the head of RBC, a very unpleasant Irishman called Jimmy Neal. It didn't achieve anything, and so eventually I left. I did return to the country after that because this Rhodesia as it really is leaflet I did, I revised it and did a new version. So I came back to the country to do that.
What is it like if somebody was to say to you, Derek, what do you want people to remember about Rhodesia? Because Zimbabwe today is a very, very different place. I mean, inflation is just skyrocketed. I mean, if you want to buy a liter of milk, it costs nearly 10 million shillings.
Well, I have a banknote in my wallet. I have one for $50 billion and one for $100 trillion, which was worth $15 American. They have now gone off the Rhodesian dollar, and they're using the South African rand and the American dollar as their currency. Yes, it is a very different country. In the old days of Rhodesia, there were some ancient ruins in Rhodesia called the Ruins of Zimbabwe, which Eric von Daniken, in his book Chariot of the Gods, wrote about. Very mysterious, nobody knows their origins. But one of our tourist brochures was to say, come to Rhodesia and see the ruins of Zimbabwe. Now we say, come to Zimbabwe and see the ruins of Rhodesia. We used to be the breadbasket of Africa. We exported food to many African countries. We are now the basket case of Africa. Mugabe has completely and utterly destroyed the country and its people. The average age expectancy in Rhodesia now is something slightly in excess of 30 years.
You know, it's really amazing because some people that I've spoken to, they say that people that were against Rhodesia, they've all said, oh, there was media censorship. Ian Smith had a network of spies and censorship and everything else. But people that I've spoken to who, like yourself, who were in Rhodesia at the time, including blacks who left to move to the United Kingdom and other parts of the world, said that wasn't the case. That's what it's like now.
Well, something that reminds me that I put into my leaflet. One of my black broadcasting friends at RBC said that blacks are far worse than whites. They are the worst oppressors and exploiters of blacks, far worse than whites. And that was a blunt, and I said, well, could I just say they could be? He says, Derek, you can modify it if you want. I'm just stating categorically that is the fact.
Have you been back since?
Only that time to, well, visit all my friends and to redo the leaflet Rhodesia as it really is. However, a situation came up quite a few years later by pure coincidence. This is when I'm living in Los Angeles. I was asked to go an audition for the lead in a film called Kariba. The lead was a police inspector who was investigating a bomb which had been placed on board an Air Rhodesia flight. And I went in to meet the people and said, I have to tell you, you got it slightly wrong. It was not a bomb placed on board. It was the SAM-7 missile fired from the ground, a surface-to-air missile. And they said, well, what the hell do you know about it? I said, well, it just so happens I was the newscaster on duty that night when it happened and had to read the death of three of my friends. So that was quite an amazing coincidence. Unfortunately, their funding fell through, and so it never happened. And I thought that was the time I will be able to go back to my country.
Well, that was my interview with Derek Partridge, who worked at RTV, that's Rhodesian television, in the 1970s, giving us a little bit of insight of what it was like in Rhodesia and Rhodesian media at the time. You can listen, by the way, to the full interview, which we will upload to our Patreon page this week. That's patreon.com/PCJRadio. Now, before we get to this week's propagation with Glenn Hauser, I just want to tell you about this Sunday's Happy Station program. This weekend marks the 89th anniversary of the Happy Station show, which began on November the 18th, 1928. For the 90th anniversary, we're going to keep it, well, kind of low-key, only because next year is the 90th anniversary, which is even a bigger number. So this week's program will be presenting a full Happy Station show from September the 18th, 1988. A Happy Station live program, that is, from September the 8th, 1988, produced and presented by Tom Meyer. Now, I should tell you that for next year's 90th anniversary of Happy Station, we are already in the process of preparing that program. So, what are we going to have? Well, you'll have to tune in next year for that. But this week, by the way, is the 89th anniversary. So, if you do listen to any PCJ programs through PCJ or through our partner stations, do go and check it out. It is going to be a lot of fun. Anyway, you are listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International.
Hello.
Hello.
Here's the Happy Station show, calling listeners everywhere.
Everywhere.
It's your station of smiles.
Hello, I'm Keith Perron, host of the Happy Station Show from PCJ Radio International, which next year will celebrate its 90th anniversary. Along with many new listeners that we have attracted over the last 7 years, there are also many of you that tune in who remember the Eddie Starts and Tom Meyer days.
Things are getting to be more improvised any minute. What was the name of this beautiful piece? Nobody knows. The trouble I've seen. Kiss it up.
Over the past few years, many of you have commented that you enjoy when we go into the archives and broadcast material that hasn't been heard in decades. With a number of people asking if the Happy Station Show and Radio Nederland archives will be made available. And guess what? Yes. That's right. Yes. The answer is yes.
Can you imagine when Happy Station was only 7 years old, you started...
I would like to invite you to become a patron at Patreon. At Patreon, you will be able to hear the latest Happy Station show. And for those who are patrons, you will have full access to unedited Happy Station shows and Radio Netherlands content, both in sound and vision, from the past 89 years. All these sound recordings have been remastered from the original tapes and discs. And let's talk about films for a moment. That's right, Happy Station did produce some films. And we went back to this production studio and remastered them. Now just look at how the original 16mm print looked before. But after spending numerous hours going frame by frame, now look at it.
It was really only a hunch. I had an intuition that... He had style enough.
Now, I know that many of you right now would like to see and hear these historical programs. Well, guess what? It's time for you to become a patron at Patreon. Those who become patrons at Patreon will be helping to support the digitization of all these tapes and films.
You cross your fingers, you hold your heart. It's curtain time and away we go. Another opening of another show.
And those who are patrons will also get rewards like rare music recordings, rare programs, books, and much more. Also, if we reach our goal of $200 a month, PCJ Radio International will produce special programs that will be broadcast on shortwave for you. So come on now, show your support today, become a patron at Patreon. For more information, visit www.patreon.com/PCJ Radio.
All right, well, it's now time to turn our attention to propagation, what's been happening, and what we can expect over the next 7 days. Here's Glenn Hauser.
Keith from Space Weather Services Australia, the global HF propagation forecast through November 18th. Normal at low and middle latitude bands, normal to fair at high latitudes. From Space Weather South Africa through November 18th, magnetic conditions unsettled, shortwave fade-outs unlikely, MUF unstable. From Met Office UK through November 19th, solar activity expected to remain low or very low. Geomagnetic activity quiet to unsettled. From FK Yanda of the Czech Propagation Interest Group, the geomagnetic field will be quiet to active on November 17th, 30th, December 4th and 6th. Mostly quiet on November 18th and December 1st. Quiet on November 19th, 24th to 28th, December 2nd and 3rd. Quiet to unsettled on November 20th, 23rd, and 29th. Active to disturbed on November 21st, 22nd, and December 5th. From the Space Environment Prediction Center, China, the planetary AND-X peaking at 19 on November 21st, rising from 2 on December 3rd to 29 the next day. Solar flux up to 79 from November 19th to 24th, and down to 72 by December 5th. From the Space Weather Prediction Center, Colorado, solar flux peaking at 75 from November 20th to 27th, dropping to 68 by December 5th. In the geomagnetic field, G1 minor storm levels, November 20th to 22nd, with ANK and Aziz reaching 20 and 5. G2 moderate levels likely December 4th to 6th, peaking at 40 and 6 on December 5th. Lowest A's and K's of 5 and 2 on November 24th to 28th and December 1st to 3rd. RSGB says the annual Leonid meteor shower, active throughout November, peaks Friday night and Saturday morning, 17 and 18 November, reaching a zenith hourly rate of 15, one of the larger showers of the year. So, park on an open FM frequency and wait for Meteor Burst DX.
All right, thanks a lot, Glenn. And with that, we've come to the end of the program. If you wish to let us know what you think of the show or have any story ideas, we'd love to hear from you. Our email address is very simple. It's mnp@pcjmedia.com. Once again, mnp@pcjmedia.com. So until next time, friends, I'm Keith Powell wishing you well. Thanks so long. Take care. 73 and 88 to the ladies.